Good evening.
Good evening.
This is Wednesday night.
It must be
February in the month of 2014 or something like that. And we're here on the West Coast. The West Coast, it's raining here. There's earthquakes. We're certain this may be the night that we are washed into the ocean. But that's okay.
We become one with the fishies.
But we're, and they are all, have been seasoned by Fukushima, and so we have that going for us too. We'll glow. We'll glow like we've been meant to glow all our lives. But in spite of all of that, we've made it tonight. We know we have at least an hour or so of existence. When we get off the air, though, it'll probably be it. Probably be it. It'll be the last days. We're talking about the last. We are the Latter-day Saints. We've come back for one last hurrah, so to speak. And you happen to be here. And isn't that something? You just happen to be here. But in spite of all of that, we're going to proceed anyway. And it's because what I found here on this desk when I got here was this book called The American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold. And it says it's the original American, so it's original for one. We know that it's an original book.
It also probably says someplace there, I don't know exactly where, but it might also say genuine.
It doesn't say genuine on my copy because mine is not genuine, it's just original. And that's all I have to work with. So that's all I found in my space, okay? I got here, that's my space, that's what I have to work with. Not bad. Not a bad concept, not a bad idea. So if that's the set of cards that's dealt to me, how then
here,
shall I play my hand?
Here and the ABD? Whoa.
So, one thing I know is that I have manifested because it seems to be able to work. It seems to be able to, I see other things. Some of them are moving. Some of them I know are dead. But I was looking at you. We're not going to let you, well, we wanted to break it easy on you, but sorry. But nevertheless, that's what we have. So you're kind of like, how did you find yourself? How did you, what is it that you find surrounding yourself? Now, I have to say that we were dealt such a strange hand when you think about it, such an unusual hand, because here we are, a body, a human biological machine, set forth on this planet, and yet every once in a while, there's this little something different that flashes through. And I was asked the question two mornings ago by somebody from Spain, and she said, how can you prove to me that a fish in a tank can have any objective effect? And I don't know if I had an answer or not, but I know that what it made me think about was that I'm encased in this human biological machine, and every once in a while, I understand that that's the case. Does this make sense? There are gaps, in other words. So mostly we just go through in this, what do they call it, white noise? The white noise of existence, right? Just that's what happens.
David, Judy here.
Judy here.
Yeah, Judy here. I don't think we're encased in our human biological machine.
Oh. But then,
I mean, we have layers up, we have layers and layers of our energy body, and they're not at all inside of the human biological machine. So we have constant contact. We just don't know it.
So, but every once in a while, we notice as Judy is saying, we notice something different, okay? We're not always stuck in that, in those moments. We're, you know, and I started thinking about this. I started thinking about this strange situation that here I am, an essential self, and here's this human biological machine, this interplay between these electrical bodies. What an unusual thing. And then I pick up this book. I find this book, the only thing in my existence, in a sense, this American Book of the Dead. What the heck does this book mean? Why does it say the American Book of the Dead, right?
Yeah.
Why does it even say that? It could say something else. It could say the American Book of the Living. It could say the American Book of, you know, see what you figure it out. But it says the dead. And I thought about it for a minute. I thought, well, the reason it says that, because it's probably the only thing that has enough potency to grab our attention.
Yeah, I don't think the Tibetan title has dead. It's something else.
The Tibetan title of this particular book, which was misnamed, as I said, in the very first class by Evan Lentz, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, but all of the translators call it Great Liberation Through Hearing in the Bardas. And we discussed that in some detail. So here we are. Here we are. There has to be something. It's like a big 2x4 that says, you know what, buddy? You're going to die one of these days, and that's the facts, Jack. So own up to it, okay? But I didn't really like that answer so much, that's the deal, is it? Because when I'm in end game, there's not a lot I can do at that time.
About anything.
Not much. So, curiously enough, one thing I want to review right now, because it'll become important to us at some point, and it's something I brought up about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I can't remember when, but it's something called the six bardos. This is Tibetan, okay? So I'm just going to read them. They're in no order, as far as I can tell, because the order is it's an infinite order, and it just keeps coming. But there are six of them, and listen to them for a second. It's the bardo of dreams and so on. I'm not going to go into it. The bardo of meditation. It's the bardo of the moment of death, okay? Then it's the bardo of the in-between state. All right? Then it's the bardo of rebirth. That's a moment. And the bardo of existence. That's what we're doing right now. It's the bardo of existence. All of these are just a cyclical thing. It's cyclical to it. And what do we put on that existence? But where did we learn it? George, where did I learn all this stuff that I got in my human biological machine?
David, you tell me, where did you learn it all?
The reason I called on Silverdale is because he came up with this great thing. He says the historical personality. Is that right? Is that your phrase?
Yeah, actually, three things. One is heredity. You know, some of this just gets passed along in the DNA. Second, formatory education, what we're taught. And third, conditioning, what's reinforced by society.
Right. So
all making up our historical personality.
So we can take some of that as as data that we have to work with, okay? This is a thrilling book, by the way, that we have before us here. And
George, could you summarize that by just saying the first totality of functioning?
The first totality of functioning, and we're trying to develop the second totality of functioning, which is our essential self.
Okay.
Exactly.
And that's the interplay that we have to work with, okay? So turn in your hymnals in this red one, which I see some people brought a black one, but we're going to go to page 30 on this one. I don't even know where you're going to wind up over there, Tamara, but it says the paragraph starts when you first came into the cosmos.
That's page 27 in my copy, David, in the 2005.
26 in the black book. We have like seven different books here.
Which chapter are you
I'm in chapter
27
for Pat.
27 in the 30th anniversary edition.
So what do I have here?
You have the 25th anniversary edition.
Oh, is that on page 30?
It's on 30 of mine here. It says when you first came into the cosmos.
Yeah.
You there?
Yep.
When you first came into the cosmos, your idea principally was, or at any rate your hope is now, to maintain the thread of consciousness throughout your experience in the universe. Usually, it works out that with all the fascination and sudden experiences with emotional sensory shocks and sympathy with the focus of attention of the biological machine, and constant demands on your attention before you realize that you're being quietly dragged into a tar baby little by little. You rarely get caught all at once. Little by little, and there's a whole bunch of exercises about recalling some of that. There you are nodding, ironically muttering something in the general direction of, son of a bitch.
Got me again.
Okay, we could dwell on that, recalling in vivid graphic detail how you got caught. But basically, it boils down to the fact that you intend to liberate yourself and the universe is doing its damnedest to stop you. This is the issue. This is the core of it. And if it can't bring you to a complete stop, then at least it's going to slow you down for a while. And jumping ahead, for every ounce of intention, this is very important, you have of getting yourself liberated, there's a trillion tons of counter-intention stacked up against you. Now, let's keep reading. So, what are your actual chances of liberation? Now listen to this. And then the author says of his own book here, how effective is this Book of the Dead anyway? If you're looking for a teaching, it's because you've lost the thread of consciousness. Okay, if we could start there, we could actually hold that in our consciousness for a while and realize that's where we're at. And therefore, I'm looking for a teaching. I'm looking for a way out. I'm looking to solve this problem that has occurred, this interplay between these two remarkable, electrical bodies that we're talking about. I forgot my way, right? So that's the case. If I've forgotten my way, what am I going to do about it? I look for a teaching. One who hasn't lost the thread doesn't need a teaching. So now, and I'm listening here, and I'm listening to everybody in the comments as I listen, and I listen, and I listen. Oh, yes, everybody's saying, oh, yeah. I already know what the teaching is. I pretty much know the teaching.
Yeah, that's right.
Like my father said, when I was 19 years old, I came home with just so excited at that moment. I just understood this concept, know thyself, and I was just so thrilled. I sit down at the table, and I said, and I'm telling him this, I'm just, sparkling out this idea, and I was just so happy. He goes, what do you mean? I know who I am. I'm the guy that's talking to you. So he had it pretty much down. And years later, I realized that he and I had a different idea. But that's okay, too. And I appreciate everything he and my mother did to help me get to this place. Because here I am, right? It's pretty cool. So, if we can hold in our mind this idea, these concepts here, that there's resistance and there's the trillion tons of counter-intention stacked up against you, if you do not believe that, if you don't hold that, and you don't understand what's meant, in very few times you'll see in the Bible there's this phrase called powers and principalities. I don't think in terms of the the devil, so to speak, mm-hmm. of being an entity that's kind of like trying to get you on its side. It's worse than that. It's worse than that. It's the power of sleep that is so profound.
Mm-hmm.
And we have done everything on a moment-to-moment basis to develop an inherent channel of moving along that mechanicality, as we can put it. And here's another thing. Right now, this is an interesting moment, actually. This is an interesting moment, and take it as such. Right now, we are practicing the habits, our Bardo habits, right at this second. And guess what? We were practicing those 3 hours ago, too, before this invocation began. We were practicing it. So let me ask you a question. How do you then approach your Bardo habits? How will you do that tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. when you get up, or for some of you, 10 a.m. when you get up? How will you approach your Bardo habits at that moment? Because that's what you're doing. All right? Susan, are you there? I think I heard your voice.
Yes, I'm here.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Yeah? Okay. I didn't post your number four section yet, but I'll get to it probably over the weekend.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just very busy.
You are? Yeah. Okay. And so then jumping ahead a couple of paragraphs, there are several fundamental problems in the labyrinth. One of them is the simplest to spot and the hardest to find. You got so caught up in the pursuits of primitive life that you're no longer interested in your aim. You're no longer interested in it. It's not even saying, this guy's not saying, you forgot it. No longer interested. So how does interest develop? I'm asking that question. And, I don't know if anybody's online. Do we have anybody online? Okay. So then, it says right here, you've lost your what? You're no longer interested. How do you develop interest? Anybody? Ivan. Ivan knows the answer. Ivan. Huh?
Tamara says it's necessity.
How did you develop or lose? What's the spark? What start? I worked with a guy named Gregory Grover for years in Los Angeles, California. He had a group called the Spinoza Gurdjieff Group, which talk to you about later, but he was a brilliant guy, and he worked with a man named Frederick Kettner, who had been on the East Coast and developed the Spinoza Center. And Kettner worked with these triads of concepts that he thought was an easy way to get some concepts through to people. Did anybody answer, by the way, Susan? You look at the
no,
log.
No, not yet.
Nobody answered the question, and nobody
Wait.
Hears.
Wait a
Pardon?
Minute. Winnipeg 9 just answered, and he said magnetic center.
Magnetic center. Okay, that's not a bad answer.
Yeah.
Frederick Kettner said, curiosity then develops into interest. And with enough interest, it develops into love. Passionate about it. We fall in love with the thing. So that's a spectrum, right,
mm-hmm.
of volumetric spectrum in a sense. And have we fallen in love? Are we interested in our essential selves? Well, as we've said about this particular crew, there's no question that we are, right? This crew, there's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
And we are forging the ways and means to make it into a passion. That it's our love of life is to do this. And we're able to do that. We can do it. And guess how we do it?
Practice.
Precisely.
Step by step.
One little brick at a time. Is that about right, George?
Yes. One brick at a time.
One brick at a time, and because that's what we can lift at our strength that we are now. We can't lift more,
no.
But we can lift something, right?
That's what you mm-hmm. always, always say. What can you do? Because you can do something, even if it's small.
Even if it's small, she says. So I think that's a very important paragraph there at the end of page 31 in my book, the one that we were just reading.
We do have more comments.
Okay, go ahead, Susan.
We have Vadir. Someone around me mentioned the Bardo, and I tried to see it.
Okay, so let's see what she says there. Someone around her mentioned the Bardo, and then she tried to see it. Okay, good.
Good for you.
Good. Next.
Hawk Lady says fascination.
Fascination.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Next.
That's what we have so far.
Thank you.
That's the first major problem of the macro-dimensional domains. No practical experience during the lifetime. And then E.J. Gold goes on to say, the middle of the voyage in the macro dimension is one hell of a time to get your first practical experience with the teaching. I was watching, I don't have regular TV as such, but I clicked on something on the internet with the Olympic Games were just held in Russia. And so they had this one event where you go down the side of a mountain and leap into the air to see how far you can go. You know, it's like a broad jump. But if you have a skis and snow and a mountain to help you, and they'd soar into the air. And I thought, that looks pretty easy. You just kind of fall down the side of a mountain. So if they put me up there, first thing, I'd be so frightened I couldn't move. They'd have to throw me out the window. But so that's the worst, that's the time that many of us have when we begin to learn. That's just the truth.
Yes. We're terrified.
We're terrified, which I'm going to get to in a minute, too. But right now, this author is saying maybe there's a different way to do it, okay? And so the context here, the context that I want to bring up is, it's the context of redeeming our life. Okay, redeeming our life, and we will take the view of the Voyager and not the primate. Okay, let me just say a couple of things about that, okay? And what I'm saying here, and what is so exciting to me about this particular book and this particular section that we're in now, that it's, because the author is suggesting that we can do that. He's saying it's terribly difficult. I don't care about that part, because he's saying it's possible. There's like this little window, right? I can get, you know, I wouldn't be able to get through a little window, but it's possible. So I'm bold enough to say, I stand up for my essential self here, to say yes, it will. And yes, it will go through that narrow, narrow path. So what do I do? You know, I'm a CPA, and I'm mostly, I'm going to demonstrate this concept, so the difference in viewpoint.
Yes.
All right? And I work with small businesses on helping them develop wherever they're going to go or whatever they may need now. And I have a particular client that I'm working with extensively right now down in Berkeley, California. And this is a very sophisticated company, and they do some very sophisticated stuff. And I work directly with the owner, and it's very, very successful, lots of money. And And then I work. And so recently she's brought in an exceptional employee, about a year ago now. Very good, technically good, hard worker, all the attributes you want from an employee. Yet at a certain point, and I'm exaggerating a little bit, at a certain point when you talk to the individual, there's this limitation about how she thinks of the business. And what I realized recently was that the difference is that the owner has what I call a proprietary interest in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And this great employee can't stand there yet. Does this make sense?
Absolutely. That's one of the main...
Fundamental, right?
Main differences.
So what's the difference? The business owner is exceptional at what her job is, and the employee is exceptional at what she does. What was it that Badir said again? Can you read that again, please, Susan?
Yes. She said... Someone around me mentioned the Bardo, and I tried to see it.
You tried to see it. So she was trying to stand in that different place. This employee stands in a fundamentally different place than this other individual.
Yes.
Okay? That's what we're trying to develop, is to stand in that different place. And that takes work. That takes just as much work, though I have many more tools than I did than I had when I was 7 or 5, when I was learning how to live my life on this planet from my tutors. And so but I have different skill sets now. And I have different levers that I can put against that. Okay?
You have refined.
Well, Harry has a good skill.
Go ahead.
He says, if we flirt with Shikana, she might flash us a little leg. This gets our interest back. Essence has great legs.
Yeah, the Shikana, and this is what I was saying about earlier, that these gaps occur.
Hmm.
These gaps occur in the utter dialogue of the mechanicality that we go through most of the time. These little gaps occur. Mostly we're in the world, and most of the time we're of the world, but sometimes somebody, you're walking along, someone says the word Bardo, and your brain goes, oh, that's a gap. And we seize those moments. The question is, can we seize those moments? First thing is that we have to begin to recognize them. The more you practice at this that we're talking about, the more you'll notice those gaps.
David, there's a good comment here.
Go ahead.
It's from Gnostic Man. Standing in a different place is what Claude calls re-originating.
Yeah, and it's a great term.
Great.
It's a great term of re-originating. What I'm implying is that if we can create this platform of re-originating, and then we will turn around and look at our past in a certain way, suddenly we're going to see something fundamentally different. We're going to see it in a different way. Thus, I indicated before about the Bardo rebirth stations, right?
Yes.
That we read on page 27 and on Appendix C. I said, some point, particularly, like I know Gnostic Man and Laura Lila, great name, it sounds beautiful, I can't say it right, but they're saying it pretty nice, you know, that's, so read together, read those to each other, all right? And if you have someone, they don't necessarily have to be in this particular discipline, but I know that on Tuesday mornings, a few people get together down in Riverside, maybe spend another 15 minutes after that class and read these to each other. Empty your mind. Attempt to have no preconception, maybe even no preconception of the words you're reading. Hard to do. Possible, but it's pretty hard.
A wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
Hard to do, though. But I was writing from Berkeley, California, after spending a day the evening at Julia Glass's house when she lived down there.
Mm-hmm.
This was many years ago. I was taking a course down in San Francisco. I took the BART over, and over all the doors there's this sign. It has four symbols above it. And, you know, it's, well, the first one is this big thing. It's like this. Big letter line going down. Line.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next to it are these two solid lines, one's like this, and crossing it is one like that. And then next to it is another, just a single little line that goes up with a little moon hovering over it.
Mm.
And then next to that was another straight line with a crossbar about two-thirds of the way up. After staring at that for a while, I asked what it was, and I was told it was said the word exit. But it's hard to not automatize that and immediately see the word exit. That's what I mean. So when you read to each other, try to read in that way that you're not even imposing on your voyager, on your guest, your meanings. Okay? Can we do this? Do we know how to do this a little bit? I think so. Okay. So, because what's going to happen is when we read these, you're going to get, I already have one that I'm going to talk about in a week or two, okay? And it was remarkable. Several people have heard it, but I like to talk about it again. And you're going to see that event that occurred wasn't this linear event, but it was a macro-dimensional event.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I know that is because I went back and stood in those macro-dimensional shoes when I saw it, and I did it. So it's the practice. Several people have said that. I remember one, this was several weeks ago, Judy said, one of them caught, do you remember which one caught you, Judy? Do you remember which one she said? It was in the third one?
No.
Maybe you're right.
No.
No. Oh, wait. In a small chamber with someone whose face keeps changing subtly?
I think that's it.
Or was it the hotel? Are you there, Judy? Do you remember what I'm talking about? Doesn't matter. And because what happened is she said she remembered it all of a sudden when she read it, and then she remembered it happening.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that comment? That's what's going to happen to us here. So this is the fight that we're up against. Okay, this is the fight we're up against. And then the next few paragraphs, EJ talks about some of the ego hurdles that we're facing. And they're very
do you want
difficult.
Comments?
Sure, go ahead.
Working to Breddy says less reward equals less concern. So how can we realize the relative importance of the essence and the e-machine life to us, whoever us is?
So one formulation is this idea of value, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm going to be interested because that's a value. Well, who is that that is saying of value? What is, is it a matter of value? It's like, what's my return on this? It's more, maybe that's where I should be, that's part of what, let's say, my fulfillment is to see that. It's like a sense of going home or a sense of, you yearn for this.
Mm-hmm.
Not because we're talking about two fundamentally different worlds here. In the second world that we're talking about, it isn't driven by the same sets of values. So if you can find it and you can stand in the place called the essential self, what you begin to sense is, this is my home. Okay, now that I'm in that home, how then can I proceed? So it's a value, but it's more of a fulfillment. It's more of a something like that. Thank you. Very good comment. Very good.
Well, and
go ahead.
There was an add-on to the comment that he was speaking of the employee and the owner.
Yeah.
The employee has less skin in the game.
Yeah.
The employee has less skin in the game. I wish I had brought this quote from Spinoza. It's at the about the fifth or sixth paragraph of his On the Improvement of the Understanding, which is an incomplete work, but the one that he wrote before he wrote the Ethics. But in it, he starts talking about the hungers of men. He goes, mainly I can see that what's offered to me by life is wealth, pleasure, and the other one. Huh?
Fame,
that was it.
Fame.
Our dead guest over here, remember. Fame.
He has access to the larger.
He's got access to the larger picture, and he just drew it in. Spinoza just spoke right through him. And so fame is the other one. He goes, so I looked at these things, Spinoza continues, and he goes, none of them, and he goes into each one in detail.
In depth.
And he says, none of them really bring me fulfillment. And he goes on to this thing about, you know, unending happiness and how you would achieve that, and that's, of course, a lifetime. But he also says, when he viewed where he was at, he viewed, talking about skin in the game, he says, I realized I was in peril. Spinoza said, he was in peril because all that was before him was these things of life.
Temperate.
They were temperate, as Pat's telling us. And he says, I reviewed myself and I was in peril. Lest
David,
I could
there's one. There's
find
one
a way out of there.
It's by Star, Sylvia Star.
Yeah.
And we originate all through the day if we notice the subtle moments. That was a follow-on to Claude's comment.
Yeah, we originate throughout the day. And I want to say that these teachings that we're talking about here, I was thinking about this earlier, Star, Ananda, that and Pat has done this for 40 years or so, and Ivan has, is that when we take the teaching and we are able to deliver to others like Star is, it's like a booster. Is there any electronics people here? What do you call it when there's the signal gets weak and then it gets boosted again? An amplifier.
Mm-hmm.
These individuals act as amplifiers. So Star Nand is giving this class on Bardo, the Labyrinth Reader's Course. She's an amplifier of a teaching that has existed since many, 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 many years ago. And EJ, by writing this book, is a profound amplifier. Okay?
Yeah, that's a very nice picture.
Go ahead.
I wanted to push this particular paragraph here, if that's all right. I'm skipping like five. Skipping
just
over.
What's the first part of it?
The clear light and the essential self. Are one
yes,
and the same.
Yeah. Go ahead. That
so
was
the clear light and the essential self are one and the same. So there isn't really any merging action you can take since there's nothing with which to merge. But you might continue to identify with the primate self and feel alienated from the absolute. The essential self has no qualities. That's how you can recognize it.
And that's what I've underlined.
Just exactly what you need to know, how you recognize the essential self.
It's hard to...
The lack of...
Qualities.
Exactly.
And we it's hard for us to understand it, but the only thing it does, it's called presence and attention, and that's truly it.
It's not a must. Not one single tiny nothing more.
So,
nothing more. So then, I'm skipping through a little bit more, because it says, what causes all these reactions toward the blob, the real world, which has become separated from the essential self by unconsciousness and considerations of differentiation? Those are the two descriptions, very poignant descriptions if you think about it. Think about at the moment of birth, what is happening? The infant is being separated from its mother. At the moment of death, what is happening? The primate self is being separated from the material world. Look, you know, this is the exact same thing coming and going. It's exactly the same. So what causes these reactions toward the real world, which has become separated from the essential self by unconsciousness and consideration? That's the work that the essential self has when you can get it. When you can get it, you know, you can have work when you can get it. That's the work when you can get it. Don't you think?
It's a great song.
Hey, yeah, somebody come up with a tune.
So part of, at these moments, these Bardo moments, like the moment of birth and the moment of dying, like at the moment of dying, part of what happens there, or as I
as you recall.
I don't recall, but I've been told, and it rings true, is that there's the fear of letting go, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And some people who have read have said that they sense that that's what the individual is going through. They can't let go of their physical body. And then later they say, oh, they let go of their physical body. And there's some people have reported these things as readers. They say that to me. And then so there's this fear on one hand, that I can't let go. I can't stop grasping for it because I want it. And on the other hand, you're sitting there and there's this enormous fear of annihilation, that I am no more. I want to grasp this thing and hold on to it, but I'm afraid that this is going to happen. So what's the natural solution? Simple. You black out. You just go unconscious. And just skip the whole thing.
Get me out of here!
So part of our game plan is to practice these gaps, all right? Don't forget the word transit, these moments of transit. I told you about these elite bodyguards. I don't think you were here at the time, but Ivan was. These, you know, very high-end bodyguards trained to protect, you know, extremely important people.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the areas where you can get in trouble, of course, is inside of a building. So what they do... is these guys, they're trained to, like, you know, go through the corridors of the building, and when they go right around a turn, they shoot them with a paintball, which, if you've ever been shot thus, and some of us have, it's extremely painful. And the person's job then is to keep their attention on the object of protection.
Yes.
Takes a little bit of training, right?
Definitely.
The Bardo of the moment of death is more intense. So
nice presentation. Very nice.
But we have tools, that's the thing.
We do.
We have tools, and that's part of what the work we're doing right here is we have these tools. And it's our work together. It's our work together here to build some of these tools so that we can create a fortress as we pass through some of these conditions. Okay?
And get shot with the paintball.
And get shot with a paintball and keep going,
and
baby.
Keep your attention on the one that you are in charge of protecting.
What else you got there, Susan?
I have working to Breddy said exactly very good. This is the horror of the situation.
Yes.
I have Scafudi. Life,
yes.
Life offers us something else, too. We need the body to do the work, so the body is sacred.
Well, let me pause on that point for just a moment, okay?
Yeah.
Because somebody mentioned, sometimes occasionally people will remind me that I'm actually a human being. And so somebody said something, I think it was George that said something about genetics. All that stuff.
Yes, and conditions.
I can't see myself, so I can't verify that. But some people think, well,
yes.
You know. Yeah?
Yes.
She's saying yeah. Okay. And if that's the case, then there's maybe, there was, I hate to say this, but maybe there was a reason why I was also manifested in this particular form rather than one of my favorites, which is I'm very partial to the anteater, the koala bear. I can't figure out the platypus. That seems like a mistake. But there are no mistakes, I guess. That's the truth. But nevertheless, here I am in this form, right? So if I'm in this form, that's the gift that was presented to me. Because when I came in this room, there was only one thing sitting here. It was just this book. It's all I had. Body. So Judy's very correct.
Well, she goes on.
The foodie.
Yes.
Go on.
She goes on and says the body also becomes spiritualized. So it's not like it's the static thing that just dies. I think the lack of qualities is the I am.
Eventually we develop the I am. And that's the chain of consciousness that we're talking about here. We're about to get hit with a Mack truck or a big truck. And by the way, I met somebody that was hit by a semi-truck sitting at a stoplight. And in his rearview mirror is this 18-wheeler going at about 50 miles an hour. Mm. He couldn't do anything. He survived. And that's about... That's getting closer to what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue is, can we develop tools and bring them into the situation of transit with us? The answer is yes, and we're doing part of it right now. Go ahead, Susan.
That's all I have.
Oh, you have?
Wait, no, now I have Molly Midway. Anteater, koala bear, consciousness and consideration of differentiation, and rainbows et al.
Okay.
And then Scafudi says, essence does not lack qualities, so if the essential self lacks all qualities, it is beyond essence.
Now that's worth discussing, David.
So go ahead and say it again, Susan.
Essence does not lack qualities. So if the essential self lacks all qualities, it is beyond essence.
Okay.
And was that George responding?
That was Harry.
Harry?
Go ahead, Harry.
Harry, yes.
Well, I just think that's a very pregnant statement. It would seem to be incompatible with what we had established earlier, that essence and the clear light are one and the same thing. Or could it be that the clear light is not something that's empty, it's something that is completely full.
Well, I think...
Is there a difference?
A little bit about what she means by qualities, what qualities... to.
Well, yeah, you know, Beelzebub is subtitled, you know, well, it's all and everything, Beelzebub's tales to his grandson.
Yeah.
It's not nothing and emptiness. It's all and everything. Kind of like the distinction that David Hawkins makes between emptiness and nothingness, like in the Heart Sutra in Buddhism, and emptiness in the Christian tradition, which is something that's full. I don't know the answer.
Harry, isn't it that emptiness is form and form is emptiness? Is that the sutra you're thinking of?
That's the one page Heart Sutra, yes. So both of those statements are true.
Can I just say something? There's somehow this is reminding me of that of this other formulation that we were talking about a week or two ago, that the sensation or the perception of the bardo that I'm in doesn't have to do with the objects, with the material, the content of the perception. It has to do with the a vibrational quality, with some other quality of the space. In other words, that there are these whole series of labyrinth chambers that are quite different from one another, but not in the way they look. They all look like this here, let's say.
They have
the room that you're sitting in presently in front of your computer or telephone. So
their sensory signature remains constant, even if descriptions vary.
Well, I'm going back to this idea about the clear light and the voidness of the void, you know what I mean, which is to say there is a chamber that is exactly like this, that, say, corresponds to this, what you're seeing on the screen now that we're sitting in. There is a chamber that's exactly this, but it is void and empty. It's the emptiness, the voidness of the void and the clear light. But it's not this content that makes it that, or anything about this content. So anyway, I'm not sure what I'm getting at here, but I'm looking at this question about the essence and the essential self.
That's okay.
I'm saying that if my essential self could be present in this chamber, but it still partakes of the void and the clear light. So maybe this is a conundrum or a paradox, let's say, just like emptiness is form and form is emptiness. Anyway, you know what comes back to me, and I never can remember which talk of the month it is, but when in the dining room with EJ,
yes.
Who's the elderly lady?
Yes.
Or Claire.
Or Claire. I think it's Claire.
Yeah, Claire, someone who was dying, you know, who knew she was dying and was sitting with EJ and had a question in the dining room, which is, you know, am I going to be ready to merge with the clear light? Am I going to be able to enter the clear light? I have a fear or a reservation about that, which you could say maybe that was a machine emotion, you know, or something less than her essential self, let's say, that was expressing that. And there was this marvelous moment there where it was just a interchange between she and her teacher with herself and EJ, but maybe 10 or 15 of us had the great privilege of being present and participating in this, where EJ looked at her and he said, Claire, how do you feel right now? What does this look like? Look at this room. And she says, yeah, I'm looking at it. He said, this is it. This is the clear light. This is what it's like. Are you afraid of this, or can you not join or merge with this? And she said, yeah, I understand. And this is reproduced. It's, well, what did you say? It's transcribed in a talk of the month, and you can read that. And but this is like the what is it, like Castaneda talking about tales of power. You know, it's like for those of us who were there, that room was, it was the dining room that we sit in and eat dinner in. You know, let's say however many days of the week or however many times we get to visit with EJ and his dining room. But this was the, when he pointed this out to Claire, that was completely evident, self-evident, that was the clear light. And even if I wasn't quite there enough for it to be evident to me, I was totally sure that I could see that Claire got it.
Right.
But that moment for her, that was the clear light, and that it was, you know, if that, and that whatever else was going on there, her essential self was present.
Thank you, Ivan. That was great.
Yeah, anyway.
And I would like to, just for clarification's sake, read that whole sentence again, because I think that the classiness of this text in some ways allows us to take our moments with each word and build them into a construct. And sometimes the construct is a bit of a mirror, so it reflects back what we put into it. And sometimes it's a doorway, and we can walk through. So here is the sentence. The clear light and the essential self are one and the same, so there isn't really any merging action you can take, since there's nothing with which to merge, but you might continue to identify with the primate self and feel alienated from the absolute. There's the next sentence. The essential self has no qualities. That's how you can recognize it.
David, this has prompted some other very interesting comments.
Yeah, go. You guys go ahead and read it.
Go ahead, Harry.
I was looking at Mark Roach wrote, I was just reading something that was saying that not only are both of those statements true, but that they are both actually ultimately saying and referring to the same thing. Just a different way of describing it. Sort of like at their extremes, a soft martial art becomes a hard one, and a hard one becomes a soft one. And then Molly, midway, says, essences are rich in everythingness. The self feels the lack thereof, and thus the dance of life, the universe, and everybody.
Very nice.
Yes, I would say so.
That's outstanding. And then Scafuti finishes this off. The self feels no lack. It is complete.
Yeah. It just has a different measuring ruler.
Outstanding stuff.
Really, really good stuff. And excellent, excellent work. I always... You know, we're right at 8 o'clock now, and this class is advertised as 1 hour.
I
We've never let that stop us before, David.
Well, I know, but I'm still a little worried.
Dan is saying, what came to mind? In another book, the essence is called the body of habits. Whether you consider the essence as having qualities or not depends on whether you're looking at it from the point of view of the self or the point of view of the clear light. Did I capture that, Dan?
Yeah.
See, like the earth and the sun, are they corresponding with the solar system, I guess?
Yeah.
So it's point of view. I mean, this passage that Pat just read talks about identification, about being identified or not identified.
It's all point of view. And we're going to get to the other comment. It's all point of view, because from a vibratory point of view, I know that there's a fundamental different quality between me and Scafuti, Pat and I, Ivan and I. In another point of view, there isn't.
Yes, and interestingly enough, when you can hold more than one point of view in the same moment, what happens?
What?
That's
a good question.
The moment gets a lot bigger.
It gets a lot bigger.
way more than just...
Go ahead with the
yeah,
I think there's another comment there.
Susan, are you?
Yes.
You're going to read it?
Sure. From Brutal Walks. This is from Sylvia. Who or what recognizes the essential self if you are standing in the shoes of the essential self?
It's not. Okay. Did you. You're going to say something, Pam? No. It's. Okay. That maybe there's a different formulation then, because as soon as you start asking that type of question, then you've created duplicity again.
Yeah.
The essential self just is in presence. When it recognizes itself, and George has brought this up before, is that it recognizes its own signature of vibratory sensation. The most profound way that we can recognize it, and Yunflower, I ask you this question right now, how are you recognizing it right now? What tool are you now using to then recognize it as you speak those words? It is not a tool of duplicity, but a tool of being. And in our being, we can recognize our fellow voyagers. The next several pages here are chock full as well. I want to turn to 39 in this particular book.
Yeah. Chapter.
It's in italics. And
what does the paragraph begin?
Says the sure way. Yeah, you got it.
I found it. I found it.
Yeah, okay. Page 34 in the 30th anniversary edition for those of you using
right.
that.
So it's important to read, and we may read these intervening pages 33 through 38 and 39. But I want to point out kind of as a put it in your hat, put it in your pipe and smoke it. This particular paragraph, the sure way to recognize the macro dimensions of the labyrinth is to assume that you are always in them at any moment, at this very moment. How does that ring, Vadir? So, that's what we're going to use. What if you are in that position, and if you start reading those Bardo chambers together, and you start those Bardo rebirth stations, this will come to life in a different, come to light, that particular paragraph. It's a profound technique.
So in that light, may I just
yes.
run away from the standard of this class, which is to only use the text that you are reading. I'm going to step outside of the American Book of the Dead and read from The Great Adventure, which is the chapter called Life in the Bardos. And there's two pieces I'm going to read to you. One says, now from your description of your experience, I know that you've been there, and that you know what the ABD is really about, and you know it has to be a red book for one thing. It's a flag. It's a flag, Jimmy repeated? Yes, it's a flag. It tells you, hey, I'm here, just like what you said.
Right.
Here you are, here, and here's the red book. It's that book, the red book. You don't pick up the red book unless you really need to. You don't pick up the red book until you're dead, mused Jimmy, somewhat perplexed. I mean, that sort of seems like in the Bardos, if you get in serious trouble, look around, and there will be a red book. If you need it, pick it up. Open it at random, and it will give you exactly the hints you need. It doesn't matter where you open it. The pages are blank until you open the book anyway.
Anyway.
It can also give you the instructions you need at that moment. It will also tell you where you are in the Bardos. Here's my second section. We remember. But if we were in here and we had never been there, we wouldn't know that at all. So,
later on, when we get into the reading itself, and we're going to see that, we're going to experiment with this concept of just randomly picking something and see what happens. And I'm going to get to the Bardo cards eventually. They're here.
Yes.
I just have
yes.
to go ding them out.
Yes.
And Mick Perry was the only one that ever bought that whole thing. And then
yes.
we moved off it.
Yes, I remember that.
And
I remember that.
These are clues, as they are. So the concept is picking up clues as we go along. Are you noticing the clues as they're presented to you? So we go through our day, clues are presented. Often what we do is we just react, because we're good little machines and we know how to do that. Sometimes we can see between the cracks in this cosmic egg, and we pause and we can see between it, and we can see something a little bit different. So we'll do that, but we're not going to do any more of it unless there's... Are we okay now, Susan? Are we done?
No, we're not done.
Go for it.
Vadir has answered. And she says, exactly the way I get there. I say I am in the Bardo, and then I am there.
Thank you. Precise. Simple.
Excellent.
Accurate.
And effective.
And Hawk Lady adds, every moment of every day.
Yeah. And part of it, too, is that you have the... You develop the weight of that vector. You develop the weight of the vector so that vector begins to become your guide. mm-hmm. rather than the powerful mm-hmm. vector of life. But always be aware and nervous, because it's got a big bite, I'll tell you, a big bite.
Now, you know that paint gun is aimed at you right around the corner.
Yes,
it's there all the time.
I heard somebody cock one just when I... That's right. That's what I'm implying. Susan?
We're complete.
We are complete, and we're complete here as well. And so thank you for your help, and thank everybody for coming and making this a phenomenal party.
Yes, and thank you, everyone, for being here with your ABD.
Thank you, Pat, Ivan, David. It's a great class.
Thanks, David,
thank
Ivan,
you.
Pat.
Good night, everyone.
Thank
we'll
you
look forward
all.
To next week.